The file you are listening to is an audio commentary by some of the Starship Excelsior production staff, not a real episode. We regularly produce this kind of bonus content, but we only include the most recent one in our official feed. If you want to hear the others, visit starshipexcelsior.com, click episodes, and scroll down to Behind the Scenes. It's not paywalled or anything, we just don't like the clutter. Thanks for listening, and enjoy!
Hello, everyone. I'm Mike Hennessy, co-producer of Starship Excelsior. Welcome to another one of our podcasts where we have a chance to talk with some of our key players and make comments about some of our episodes. And this time around, we'll be reviewing the second full episode of our series, Turns of Events. And joining us tonight is Gary Colbom. Gary, say hello.
Hello, Gary.
It's good to have you here. And James Haney. James?
Hello, Gary.
Hello. Yeah, there you are. Okay, it's good to have both of you with us. And it's a real pleasure, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And
we know, really, because we already did it.
Yeah, it really went well in rehearsal. Yeah, this was terrific. So, James, if you want to explain what happened, go right ahead.
We'll be real quick here. We recorded this whole commentary a couple of weeks ago, at the height of the pandemic, and then at the end of the recording session, we sent our files over to Mike, and Mike processed them all very nicely, and he wrote back to me and said, "James, I can hear all of our voices on your file, on your file, but none of your voice. So we don't have any versions of your voice. Where's your voice?" And it turned out I had recorded my entire part of the commentary using the wave out input instead of my microphone. So I was recording everything they said and nothing I said, and we had to redo the whole thing. So I'm really grateful to both these boys for coming back and doing a second attempt at the commentary at episode 102, Turns of Events. Hopefully it will be just as vivacious, if not more so, than it was last time.
Well, just speaking for myself, I can say that it's my pleasure. I don't mind at all, because certainly there have been times when I've tested the limits of anyone's patience with some of my issues. And Gary, if you want to chime in on that, go right ahead. But that's just my opinion.
And remember, your per episode bonus raise depends on that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, it's as long as we don't have to do a take three, it's okay.
All right. Well, that's fair enough. I don't think we're going to run into that situation this time. So what we're going to do is we're going to, on my cue here, let's see. Whoops. All right. What I am going to do is cue us in, give a 3-2-1 countdown, and we'll start the episode, and then we'll do our best imitations of Mystery Science Theater 3000. So I don't know who's going to be Crow. I don't know who's going to be Mike. I don't know who's going to be Servo. But anyway, we'll all have our own comments, and once in a while a snarky comment maybe, but in any case, we hope that it'll be an enjoyable production, and it gives us a chance to hear one of our classic episodes again, and gives everybody a chance to hear where we've been and compare it to where we are now. So, gentlemen, if you're ready, the countdown will be in 3, 2, 1.
Jump.
Cue theme.
Space. Oh, okay. We get the Final lovely Generations frontier. Theme song. I think this is our last time hearing it. Right at the top.
These are the voyages of the Starship Excelsior.
Yeah, I think that maybe there are some folks out there who don't realize that the theme that we currently use, that was done by a member of our staff, is not the one that we always had.
Yeah, I guess that's true, because we tell people to skip the first season when they're brand new listeners, unless they're very brave. But yeah, when we started out, I looked around at all the other fan series out there, and I noticed the First Contact theme song was already in use, and the Nemesis theme song didn't make any sense for this series, but the Generations theme song is really quite good. I really like the whole score of Generations, and I think it's underrated work in the grand schema of Star Trek soundtracks. So I thought it just had the right bold adventure happy spirit that I wanted the show to have. And so I grabbed it. And then no one else could use it for a while. But then we got our beautiful, even better theme song from Sam Gillis. And have been using that ever since.
Returns, Act 3, Turns of Events.
I like how Yubari is in the credits just to make you realize, yes, she actually is an important character. We're just not commenting on her right now.
Yeah, that's one of those things where it would be easy to miss that if you hadn't kind of given a little poke in the ribs there with that. That was a good idea. And Gary, one of the things that happened is that we realized very quickly, James and I, that we were kind of in over our head, or maybe not kind of over our heads when it came to doing this production. And you came along and really helped us get our act together as far as understanding how to do a much more polished presentation. Can you tell us how you found us and some of the things that you felt like you had to do in order to get us onto a better track?
Well, I don't know if James found that email again, but I had been doing live sound for a community theater for about 10 years.
So that's it.
And I played with sound effects for a long time and discovered computers were able to do it better than reel-to-reel tapes. And, you know, so stuff like that. But yeah, I'd been listening to the BBC radio shows for a while, old radio shows. So I had some idea how the system works. You want those voices to be up in front and everything else to be kind of behind so you can hear what's going on.
Dovahan groaned inwardly, remembering something Captain Amazon.
What was the first thing that maybe you heard that said, oh my God, we've got to fix that. We just can't have that. Was there anything like that that just jumped out at you?
Crewman Adow, do you have
all it's all the different recordings, I suppose.
Yes, sir.
You know, a lot of them, some of them have the reverberation in them and some don't. Yeah. You know, they have a really close microphone and you got some noise and stuff like that. Some of them are so bad you can
sound
hardly.
Sound levels weren't even?
Yeah.
Some of them are just so. Yeah,
some are just so noisy, and some of them only give you one take sometimes that it became difficult to do some of that. I've had to reshape some of the sounds in the early times manually.
Yep, and you laid down a lot of the early processes, like give us three takes. Here's how to record next to your microphone.
I see a
very early file from the way back times called the compression guide, where you just showed us in a real basic way, here's how you make it so the voices have, you know, that have these high peaks and the low valleys sound a little bit closer to something we can hear the whole thing of. Just really basic stuff we had no idea about.
Yeah, the key thing is that if the listener has his headphones on, you don't want it to get too quiet so that they turn the volume up and then you have an explosion which blows their ears out. So you want to have it in that tighter range. Plus, that way you can put them up high, and then the sound effects can still be heard in the background without the voices killing it either. So it's a little tricky.
I dare say it took me 10 years to really figure that out. But, I mean, you took us a light year ahead in about 3 weeks.
This is some of the stuff that I knew a little bit about, but I had worked in radio news, and really all I ever had to do was basically add one soundbite to an overall file. And this idea of working multiple tracks so that you could have layers and layers and layers of different effects. You could have a track with music on it and a track with explosions on it and a track with background sound effects along with the dialogue is really something that was very new and very difficult to master. And it's one of the things that I'm sure that a lot of people who sign on as post-producers find out very quickly that this is not quite as easy as it sounds.
We've got three people in the hopper right now who are learning that as we speak. Or
altered and amplified. We'll see if they last. If they make it through the first one, they'll be with us forever, probably. Yeah. But
two of them already turned in first drafts, which is more than 70% of them ever do. You'll have to think a little God bless them.
That is excellent. I'm very glad to hear that.
Gary also gave us the first post-producer test way back in the day.
I'm going to have a talk with the Oracle.
Yeah. Wait here. And you gave us the initial sound effects library, like the general library. We'd already gotten a lot of our effects for Star Trek effects from Darker Projects, but you brought in the SFX CDs.
Yep, the BBC and Sound Ideas and all and was Hollywood Edge. And I've got more that I need to integrate in there. So,
oh, that would be great.
All kinds of stuff laying around out there.
You send us a list. We can integrate that in. We've even got a script now that'll rename the file to match the catalog entry. Which is, it is not very exciting to you people in the audience, but extremely exciting to us audio engineers who no longer have to scroll through a file that says 36.ogg in the and 37 and 38 and figure out which one has the right sound effect in it.
Yeah, well, that's not even as much of a problem as if you find a really cool sound effect and then you try to remember where it was, what the number was, if it doesn't have a description. The BBC files at least have names on them. They'll say, okay, this is outdoor sounds, meadow, birds chirping, or people walking on a gravel footpath or something. So at least you've got a chance. If you know that you had a BBC effect, you've got a reasonable chance of finding that again if you know what you're looking for. If you're looking for a number, oh my god.
Oh, it's a mess. Yeah. I think we got rid of all the numbers now in the library. Yeah. That was in the last couple of years. Well, yes, I did find the first email you sent me, Gary. It was on August 7th, 2007.
Why are you here, Oracle?
Said you had cool edit, a lot of sound effects, and you were willing to help.
Unfortunately, previously unknown element.
You offered to send a sample. I said, you do not need to send a sample. Lordy, yes. Please come on.
It's like the old Hollywood joke about the actor who can't ride a horse, but they ask him to be in a Western. Can you ride a horse? Why, sure. You know, we would have never known.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, for all I know, this whole thing is, your whole history is faked. You just read up on compression right before you got in.
And how did you meld your hull with the mountain?
You knew it was up.
Yep, the internet is full of stuff.
He's saying database corruption is extensive for the first time.
This is interesting because this is our first appearance of Sam Gillis, right?
Yes, it is.
As the Oracle.
But I can no longer make any more sense of that.
Yeah, I guess we can talk about it more in the next episode, but I did not expect to cast him as a main cast member ever. I was just really pleased to have such a good Oracle. And then I kind of drafted him in.
Yeah, just the right tone of prissiness, you know, just as the hologram. So you figure, you know, the medical holograms always were just kind of like, you know, kind of have their nose in the air all the time.
And this one, especially.
Yeah, and this guy is a little bit of a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
He's a little condescending and a little bit uppity. And,
yeah, despite the fact he doesn't realize he no longer knows why he's doing the things he's doing.
Oracle, you're not making sense. You caused
You're not making sense, Oracle.
Captain, you're forgetting about the prior contaminants.
What prior contaminants?
Like that.
Information unavailable. Database corruption is extensive.
I do still love bringing that joke back just because now Lorok is the person who both was at the receiving end of that joke and also the actor who made the joke in the first place.
I hope so. Yeah. Everything depends on it.
That is a good running gag.
It is.
I don't know.
It's hard to develop running gags in a show that only produces a few episodes per season, I've discovered. Presumably, if we were doing 24 episodes a year, we'd be able to flare a lot of those sorts of things in.
Captain.
But since our characters don't interact all that often when they're not in the middle of an action scene, there's not a lot of time to get those sort of, you know, running references going, like Picard's coffee or Picard's tea and Janeway's coffee.
Mr. Larock here even discovered a full-size battle.
So when you discover one, you hang on to it for dear life.
They attack.
They will not attack, Captain. I am their premier. Despite the Oracle's prophecy regarding you, there is not yet call for assassination.
There's our 7-foot lizard queen. Exactly?
I presume. I just have this picture of her being like 7 feet.
I don't know. That's right. I think that's in the script somewhere. That the Palantrians are all 7 feet tall lizard people, and that is that height. It's in my head too. It's very hard to picture though.
Best if your males took a proper.
Especially with, I have a mental picture of Cortez, but I also have a mental picture of Elise Krallick, who I've seen in in pictures now, and it's very hard to put her up against Betranon, Sora G, and yet she just stands up to him with the sheer power of her intimidation.
I remember somewhere Patrick Stewart saying that it's very easy for a really good, well-trained actor to project an aura of command. And I think that's interesting because that's something that Elise does so well. And yet she'll tell you, she has told us, that she had no training whatever when she signed on with us. And yet she's shown a lot of range and a lot of depth in playing two entirely different characters and making them really distinct and stand out on their own.
Yeah, I guess she's just a natural.
The castle exudes military strength in a way that the presidential palais in Paris never could.
Yes, you've managed to find quite a few good people to keep in the cast.
Point on this general
We've been unbelievably fortunate,
beyond the usual
or blessed, if you want.
Is chiefly notable
just
for
the talent that has shown up for this show, both behind, in front of the camera, microphone, whatever, and behind it has been incredible. There's so many reasons we should have died in our first season, and we didn't die. And that is not because I was smart or knew what I was doing. It's because people showed up and carried the show.
Purely natural causes.
Now I like to think we know enough that we could get by we could lose someone and still keep going. But those early days, geez.
Captain Cortez is in her second year as first.
This is a very long narration.
Yeah, this is okay. hello. Hello.
I seem to remember in the original, the rehearsal of this, we sort of critiqued this narration, and by the time we were done with our critique, the narration was still going. that said, it is one of my. I like this particular narration because it does give a lot of sort of color to the fortress that you couldn't get through just having the people. I mean, you're not going to have the premier of Valandria say, boy, it sure is interesting, all these skulls around our walls with the leaders of the last 1,000 years. But it still shouldn't have been here. The problem is it's just not appropriate for an audio drama, and I was still figuring out what things didn't work in audio drama yet.
We could have just had Gomer Pyle come in and say, golly.
Look at all them skulls.
Woo!
We will now return to our regularly scheduled argument about the future of the planet.
Reawakeners of the wasting. Then, take the.
It was nice of Betrana to immediately say, "What's your plan, Premier Sarga G?" to show that it's not Sora G. But I suspect that this detail that these are different characters was somewhat lost on listeners who were not obsessed with knowing the names of all the different Valandrin, especially in the 8 weeks or so between episode releases.
In the future, Betrana, and have lost.
Well, that is one of the good things that happened the way this cast out, because you always run the risk, especially when you don't have a huge talent pool to draw off of, which we didn't. We've got a bigger pool now, that all the characters might sound alike.
Yeah, because we were double casting everyone left and right. In this case, it kind of made sense because they were sisters, but it's pushing it.
Yeah, but in this case, you've got several different. I mean, you got Kennedy, you got Joyce, you got other female characters who do sound different, and that does help sort things out. Even if you don't know the names, you know they're different,
right? But in this case, I ran out of women and double cast Kennedy.
To seek alliance with these outsiders, they would be
very talented woman, Kennedy.
She's good. And you keep forgetting. Like you hear her in one role, and you forget you heard her in the last role. At least I do.
Yeah.
I was just listening to the musical episode again, where she's Faith Natukov, and within about 5 minutes, I was like, I'd forgotten about Neva, I'd forgotten about Sora G. It was just Faith Natukov.
Despises war. that determines their rulers by the...
Which is how she ended up as Neeva in the end, eventually. Because she kept on turning in these great performances, and I knew she could do it, so...
And once we are firmly in bed with
And that's why I get all the roles of people that die.
Have we that they would...
Yes, you're very good at dying.
Intimate terms.
Yeah.
You die in this episode, Gary.
World, but our men.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'm even in this episode.
Mongrels as our
Let me check.
Dare you suggest that I would endorse such a...
Yeah, I think you come in a little bit later on down the road.
As I think it's later on. I am in the credits at the end, but I must have produced some part of it somewhere. Don't ask me what part.
You...
Yeah. Well, I cast you as Ensign Theropol, but I don't think he's in this episode.
You might be able to claim the throne of the Premier for Nod.
Well, I did have fun because I had had one episode under my belt as a producer, and I'd learned quite a lot from episode one to episode two, I think, as we all did. So I had at least a better idea of what I was trying to do. And I had fun in a big battle scene toward the end of this where I kind of throw in everything
and don't forget the final
do the old kitchen sink routine where it's like, oh, this sounds good. How about this body, great big body dropper, you know, this swords clanging and stuff like that where you have these crowd noises, these big battle noises and all that. So that was fun. And it's one where, Gary, you might have a different opinion on this. I'm interested in your thoughts. My thought is that where you really go crazy as a producer is looking for mundane sounds. Exotic sounds are really surprisingly easy. You go to the BBC library, you got all sorts of mad scientist stuff. You got just incredible stuff to choose from. But if you need somebody,
thing and then just distort it to hell.
Yeah. But if you just need something like somebody setting a glass on a table, try to find that.
Or sheets rustling or blankets. Yes. You might still be able. Someone sitting in a chair properly.
Oh yeah.
I cut a scene for another one. Julian Bain does an audio series of Doctor Who, and I cut one of his episodes. And there was a scene where everybody sat around a kitchen table, and just finding something that would portray the idea of people sitting in chairs and scooching up to the table nearly drove me nuts.
To be informed of the presence of a telepath before an interview begins.
That's when you break out the recorder and find a table and start moving chairs around.
Well, I have done that on more than one occasion.
Hardly the spirit of the law.
If I recall correctly, the treaty also requires that a formal declaration of war...
This conversation feels like Sharp and Dovan's whole relationship summed up right at the beginning.
...within communications distance. This is one of those rare occasions when a war...
Yeah, it's always a little edge to it.
Yeah. They like each other, but they have such a hard time dealing with each other's principles.
POW status and are to be treated as rogue agents of the Valandrian...
Because they both have principles, but they're different. And they don't fit. And they're both so stubborn.
...using the intelligence we just gained from that interview of questionable legality.
Not that I've been thinking about the new episode we're working on or anything lately.
Anyhow, you seemed very focused during the interrogation.
Anyway, this whole scene shouldn't exist. I think we should mention that at some point. This whole thing where they try to work out the backstory of the Valandrian, just let it go. Sora G wants to have a coup. You don't need to know that she murdered her sister. It doesn't matter. It's just color. And it was color that wasn't delivered in a useful way that felt like it was moving anyone forward.
It's just one of those things that no doubt that you would have picked that up
and I believe all
down the road. Of course, having, as we do now, beta readers who can go through it and maybe spot those things. Because there was one of those things in yesterday's Enterprise where I kind of spotted that and said, you know, this what we're talking about here, we could do the same thing in, like,
thank you, sir,
instead of two pages, right, like one paragraph.
Yep, and you were right. That's tomorrow's Excelsior, the scene with the plant. The scene about the plant. The brief discussion of the plant, which, it was brief in the final draft. It was a little longer in the original draft.
good yeah. luck.
Yeah.
And it was like, thank okay, you, enough sir. About the plant. You know, it's...
Well, sir, which way is the main shuttle bay from here?
Yes, unfortunately, we don't have a way of taking the show on the road to find out what's wrong with it.
Sorry, Lieutenant.
Yeah, right.
How many Rotten Tomatoes got thrown at us tonight?
Yeah,
14. Well, that's good. There were 38 the last time, and a couple of dead cats. So there's a lot less tomatoes and no dead cats. Yeah, things are looking a lot better here.
Yeah. Maybe you should play it back. I do wonder. Ready to figure out the dreams. I worry sometimes because I've been much better about cutting things that should be there since I was a child writing this script. And we cut a lot more things now out, and I don't even write things now that shouldn't get written a lot of the time. But my episodes still come in 75 minutes, and they feel like they should mostly be not that long, and I'm not sure what I should be cutting. So, here's tonight on the auto commentary, James's insecurity about his own writing.
General. I
listen to our episodes, Mike. I like all this stuff. I don't want to cut any of this.
No,
but I should cut 15 minutes of this, and I don't know what 15 minutes to cut out of an episode. Like,
that have taken us to this set.
I don't know.
Premiere.
Miles to go before I sleep.
It is words that brought us here, Sora G. But not
well, it's the old story that I told about Frank Capra and his first attempt to release Lost Horizon back in the 30s.
Right, and burn the first reel.
Burn the first two reels. Yeah. And that was like, you know, the film was 30 minutes shorter and it's now considered a film classic. And when it was first rolled out with those extra two reels, people were literally laughing and walking out.
Yeah.
And it was like the biggest picture that particular... Columbia Pictures had ever done, and they basically bet the ranch on it. Then, of course, when your test audiences are just like basically coming out and gagging and throwing up on the sidewalk, or worse, even laughing at it, that doesn't bode well.
Yeah, I'd like to think we've gotten better about that. Nurturing Life opens with a murder.
Contrary, Captain.
Better Eula opens with a shuttle crash.
Have the opportunity to evaluate.
Before that, Tomorrow's Excelsior does just open with a bunch of people sitting on a table, but it's Chekhov and Uhura and Savick, and there's no context given as to why they're suddenly on screen, which is a lot of fun for me, and I feel like that sells it. That's enough.
It would be beneath my honor.
So I we've been better about opening with action now and not doing entire episodes where nothing happens.
Captain. No.
And yet. They
then
still come in pretty long.
The presence of my personal guards.
Only I don't know. Maybe males. People who listen to this can tell us in the comments on Facebook or on
Hastings
iTunes
to
or whatever.
In with you. Sergeant Ernest will remain
whether
with
they
me.
Think our episodes should be
so
cut down, and if so, what should be cut?
That's an order, Captain.
I call regulations if you force me, ma'am.
Very this is
well.
Your scene, isn't it, Mike?
The
you
rest
did this.
Of you,
you did this
Veteran
whole fight.
Force, except you, Mr.
Yeah, I believe I did. And that was a.
Is everyone
that
armed?
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun because
that's good.
It was just like every time I was thinking, maybe I've got enough.
Draw weapons. Now,
here we go.
Good luck, everyone.
Yeah.
Charge!
Do you even remember how you did that, aye, sir? Because I'm pretty sure we never got the lines recorded for it, and you just came up with something.
Not coming right at us.
I have no idea on that. That
That's
was
fine.
It was dim, forgotten memories.
13 years ago. I forgive you.
Get behind me, Captain.
Yeah.
No, Hastings. We face this together.
Regulations, ma'am.
Yeah. I'm reading the script as I go here. And... there are some incredibly detailed music notes, because this is the days back when I did the music notes in the script and just handed you the music and said, make it work. And you made this work. That timing
After
is perfect.
After several tries, I think. Yeah, but
you got it. I don't remember the extra tries. I just remember the final product.
Well, and really, one of the nice things, one of the things that's really helped, and I think really is helped overall. Again, this is background stuff, and hopefully it won't
turn people off. But one of the things that happens behind the scenes is that now we all have enough skill, you particularly, to be able to do the music yourself. And that really, we just feed the music, feed the scene without the music. You lay in the music, and it takes a lot of the burden of producing off of you, and it stops us saying, you know, that would be so good. That's really great, except that that comes in like half a beat too early. Or something.
45 seconds off. My ability to estimate how music matched up with scenes was famously terrible. we had Jim at one point, like, he was required to do a scene with some James Horner piece from Star Trek 2. He ended up splicing in an entire different James Horner piece from Star Trek 3 into the middle of this piece of music just to make it fit the timing that I had required of him. And of course, it's James Horner, so I didn't notice because all James Horner fits together very nicely. But I've discovered it later.
But it's just one of the learning curve types of things that we had to experience, and it finally it just made perfect sense. No, give James the finished scene, and then have him add the music, and that just.
I'm glad to hear you feel that way. Because honestly, I worried that the post producers felt like I was taking something away from them, or that I didn't trust them. And I do trust them. They've always done amazing work. I just discovered that I liked experimenting a lot more, and that it took me less time. I was spending days, literally days and weeks, figuring out soundtrack notes and then sending them out to everyone and making sure the timings worked and everything. And it turned out it was just a lot easier to take the scenes, put them in my own mixer, and experiment myself with the soundtracks after they were done. You guys were great, always.
Yes.
Shut up.
Consistently, forever.
So we did.
Well, of course, that brings up the other thing that I've got to admit with a little bit of a red face was that I didn't know how to save a full recording session. So if you said, okay, I need you to slide that music cue back about 5 seconds, then I had to go back and rebuild the entire scene, which if Gary hadn't pointed out how to save a session properly.
You would have died of old age just trying to produce scenes by now.
And I probably would have gone to Minnesota and taken you with me. That was
James Haney, 25, also died of old age. Oh, this is another long narration.
Nearly a half hour earlier. Then they would make for the nearest computer bank.
Mr. Pichik Rota's last interesting... Logs. Oh, no, he shows up one more time.
Where That's Captain fine. Cortez had
This is an interesting scene, because not only does it have this very long narration in it, which also doesn't fit, but is well-delivered as usual, but the script says everyone is whispering. And everyone is whispering, except Dr. Sharp. Dr. Sharp didn't see that script direction, didn't read that bit of the script, and so recorded all our lines at full volume. And the whole scene gets real weird because of that. Why is everyone whispering around Dr. Sharp? But I was too shy, and we were too determined. I was particularly too determined to get episodes done in 8 weeks or less. And second drafts of scenes were so onerous at the time that I was just like, heck with it, we're not going to make Sharp re-record these lines. And that is maybe my largest regret about this episode is I should have made Sharp recut these lines because this scene sounds so weird when everyone is whispering except her.
Yeah, but then again, maybe she's just showing her rebellious streak. I'm not military. I'm a doctor, and I'll talk any damn way I please.
Even in silent running mode.
Yeah.
I know silent running mode makes no sense in Star Trek because sound doesn't travel in space, but they did it in Balance of Terror, and that's canon. So sound matters.
Well, silent running also includes not emitting warp signatures and things that everybody can see.
That is true. That is true. But in Balance of Terror, everyone on the ship actually gets quiet, and they're not allowed to talk. And I thought that was real weird. But it's because Balance of Terror was taken from The Enemy Within, which is a submarine movie. And whoever adapted it for Star Trek did not bother with the whole no sound in space issue.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that would have been a... And they could have fixed that very, very easily.
So easily. Have people talk normally and have some emissions.
On both sides. Yeah, and just have them hit the fire button on a phaser bank or something.
Exactly.
You know, just, yeah, it would have been no problem at all. I mean, it's just something. But I tell you, the episode is so good, I never noticed it until you just mentioned it. So, yeah.
I just lost phaser control.
It was one of the really classic episodes.
Releasing power.
Yeah,
sensors,
agreed.
Communications, warp drive.
Transporters, life support.
The reason they fought with sticks and stones. Quick.
Now it gets
give me
good.
Manual
this,
control
this
before
whole sequence,
navigation.
All of this, to the end of the episode, I feel like redeems a lot of the parts that came before it.
Taking
it's
us in.
It's just a good little sequence. It doesn't even add much to, like, the plot. It's just a well-structured...
Go!
Just a big narration block coming up. But they run around, they do some hypo-spraying, then they got that great battle as they lift off. There's these great sound effects of running around. I don't remember who did this. The shuttlecraft hovering in the background and fading out as he moves away from it. That was brand new technology for us. We had not, until now, figured out how to pan anything.
The first thing the man noticed was the stench of blood and death.
That's probably you again, Gary.
The same for every species.
Yeah, panning is very important.
There were bodies everywhere.
Those first couple episodes don't know that.
Yeah. Whether they're prone
and it's always something I have to tell new post producers coming in because they don't
brutal form of
notice it. No one notices it. No one in the listening audience notices panning going on, generally speaking, unless it's pointed out to them. And someone says, hey, did you notice that everyone in this scene is 3 decibels to the left, and then the other person they're talking to is 3 decibels to the right? And that way they sound like they're having a conversation. And the post producer's like, what? Oh, yeah.
They're not standing on top of each other.
Exactly. And it sounds different, and you notice it.
Not important.
One of those little bits of movie magic.
Hunter gestured to a spot on the ground a few meters away.
Yes, I've been trying to work on getting some presets so that you can set up tracks like a stage blocking. You know, you'd have your upper stage and, you know, and closer down in front. And so you just set a few presets and put them on the track, and whatever you drop in there ends up wherever you wanted it to go. And then if you want it to move from one place to another, you just crossfade between the two tracks.
Do some envelopes.
Damn this radiation.
Oh, Marsh.
Do what you can, then tend to those you can help. Those Valandrin crews
how would you
will
do
be
that?
Here in 4 minutes. We need to be
well in good old cool edit. You can use the you can use the graphic equalizer to provide the distance where the frequencies change, and it also has a gain control on it, so you can actually have it get quieter as you go out. And then you have the panning set for the angle you want. You know, the listener's always in the center. Then you use polar coordinates essentially for everything else. So then you have to set up.
Does that work in stereo?
Oh yeah,
Lieutenant.
You can do that.
Well, you have to have the sound in mono to make it really work well, but it comes out in stereo.
Slap you away.
Because each track is
file in mono.
So it's just a question of setting up a chain of, okay, this is the graphic equalizer for a certain distance, and then here's the pan for a certain angle, so you're dropping it on the polar coordinate, and then anything you put on that track comes out in that spot. And it kind of works.
How can you do...
There were
polar coordinates in stereo.
Not ours. They attacked.
Well,
I'm sure this is basic audio stuff, but
if everything is in the center, that's where the listener is.
Yeah,
that's the zero point.
Dr. Sharp is
and then left and right, of course, is a plus and minus the angle. And I just chose like five different divisions. So it's either the extreme 90 degrees, you know, on either ear, and then three divisions in between.
From the future.
And then each distance is like you're a meter away, then you're 2 meters away, then 4 and 8.
No,
that I get. That I get.
And then that way you put the two things together and it sounds like it's way over there someplace.
And it has information, a lot
in the distance
of information.
That's gorgeous. Of course, you'll have to change how the reverbs work and everything depending on the room, right?
If you don't do it on the After Effects, if you want something to happen in the track itself, you have to kind of fiddle with that.
You generally need that. You can just drop that effect on the boss or something. I don't actually understand anything in multi-track editors. I barely know enough to do my job.
I beg your pardon, Lieutenant.
I say ideally you could have it all mixed into one track and then you can put the reverb on later. But ideally you'd kind of want it so that wherever they are, it's different kind of a reverb. And if you want to do then you have to get into the the convolutional reverb, I guess is what they call it nowadays. You have to feed it an impulse map, and then wherever you put the sound in that area, it sounds a little different. I haven't gotten that far yet.
That is fascinating. Where do you
that's something well beyond what Cool-Edit can do. So I haven't quite gotten past that yet.
Do you subscribe to a newsletter or something?
They're getting close.
Is there a newsletter where they talk about intelligent things that sound people should know? Commander,
Lieutenant, I'm sure there's magazines, but most of that's about music these days. Or live theater sound. You kind of have to go into sound engineering books or something to really understand that, but they don't really talk about how to do radio shows. Nobody does radio shows anymore.
The field here, it will
disrupt electronics, I know.
Now they're doing them again. There's a big audio drama revival going on.
I suppose Big Finish is a example of that, I suppose.
Big deal, but there was a sudden big explosion about 2 or 3 years ago
of
audio dramas being taken seriously by the critical press. And you started to see things like The Bright Sessions, which is a show about, I don't know if you guys know this show, it's about paranormal, a counselor for superheroes, basically. They have superheroes, and they need a therapist, and she's their therapist. Her name is Dr. Bright. And that just got optioned as a TV show.
There's a big mountain range.
Something else got a TV deal.
I have an idea.
Yes, sir.
People, there's actual awards given by decent newspapers like The Guardian, where they listen to audio dramas and give them awards. Obviously, we don't appear on any of these lists because we are in the third tier sort of licensed world.
We dodge or we die. Take your pick.
But yeah, all of a sudden there's people doing audio drama again. It's sort of unsettling, but also great to see.
I'm sure there's an education someplace out there, tutorials, but hey, look on YouTube. You never know.
Yeah, I'm sure there's tons on YouTube. It's just so hard to find like the right level of, I am not a total idiot. I've used Cool-Edit and Audition before, but I don't know enough to understand how convolutional reverb works and impulse maps. This is a great scene. I'm just going to get back to the episode for a second by pointing out how nicely done this is.
Just as Lorak had predicted,
although,
the photon torpedo.
I wish we'd had
the
narration on top of the sound effects, because that would have been even cooler.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons that we did away with the narration concept. One of several is that we couldn't figure out what the convention should be. Should you have the narrator over the sound effects, or should you just have the narrator over silence? Sometimes he was talking over silence, sometimes talking over sound effects, and. Rather than trying to make that work, I think we're trying to pound a round peg into a square hole and just didn't work.
Yeah. I'll tell you though, when I do the remaster of Turns of Events, I've mostly been just doing pop correction and volume correction. But it's going to be really hard for me to resist the temptation to slide that narration back on top of the sound effect. But I promise I would not George Lucas these shows, so I don't think I can.
Well, I can tell you, there are just so many things that were done then.
Well done.
That everyone. You have source material here. Unless some of these actors were willing to recut entire segments, it wouldn't work anyway. Because again, you're limited by the quality of what goes in
the source file.
And you have in the early episodes, you have people using stick microphones, gaming headset microphones,
I think about all of us have
much higher quality gear to work with.
One of the possibilities. I was going to ask
I asked
you
for
to
a decent microphone for my birthday, so I'm hoping. No, we'll see.
Will do.
Oh, okay. Well, if your favorite elf needs a suggestion about which one, then
him or her drop me a line and I'll make a suggestion.
I made my choice. I put it on the list and we'll see what happens.
Go ahead. Which one is it?
I went with the Blue Yeti. Although I was deeply tempted by the ATC. Even then, there's a number, isn't there?
2020.
Until then, probably.
AT 2020.
I have it in very good. Somewhere. I made a pro and con list and everything.
Yeah.
I think it's one you recommended, actually, Mike. So in a way. Yes.
You know, Blue Yeti is very well regarded. Yeah. So I mean, by a lot of people. I mean, it's one of those things when you start getting into real upper level professional quality stuff. A lot of people who consider themselves upper level professionals don't like USB microphones.
No, and as well they shouldn't. They're professionals, and they look down on us USB users snobbishly. But
yeah, but at the same time, there are some really good USB microphones out there, and Blue Yeti is a choice for a lot of people who are making their living
stuff like this. That's good too. Yeah. That's good to hear. I know the first time I heard someone recorded on a Blue Yeti for Excelsior. I think Larry got a blue snowball in like the early season 2, and I immediately wrote him and said, "What is that? I need that. I want that microphone."
Yeah.
And now, 10 years later, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if the birthday elves are in my favor.
Recognize voice print, Lieutenant Commander Alcar Dovan.
Well, I don't use a USB mic, so I won't say anything.
Well, you're looking down at us peasants from on high.
To speak for yourself, I've got a microphone that is and the Jim Hadar fighter so far into overkill territory, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, what do you currently have, Mike?
I use a Sennheiser 416.
Nice.
Yes, which is the standard for a lot of Hollywood applications.
Computer.
Yeah. I know certain people in the audience will judge me for upgrading now after 13 years of doing this to a blue snowball, the lowest bar of upgrade. This commentary is all about hard truths. So there's a hard truth for y'all.
Awaiting authorization from the executive.
Well, the nice thing is that it's not so much raising the ceiling as it is raising the floor.
That's right. Yeah, this is why I haven't been able to give myself any good parts for the last several years, because everyone else is. Quality is so high. I just can't justify giving myself any parts beyond basically one-liners. Maybe now with a better microphone, I'll be able to do that.
USS Excelsior, now under command of Lieutenant Commander Alcar Dovan.
I like his change of command.
Also, I never want to be that guy who gives himself good parts because he's the producer and no one can stop him.
Am I correct in thinking that the third Alteran Convention forbids the use of biological weapons?
Yes, of course, sir.
I adored Star Trek New Voyages. It would appear Star Trek New Voyages was a trailblazer. It brought everything into it. It made it possible to make Excelsior, as did other trailblazers. And it made it possible for people to realize that fan films were a thing. And it did incredible work, and it worked for some great people.
Your engineering team.
And James Colley was never a very good Captain Kirk. And he was because it was his production. He paid for it. He gets to do that. But I always told myself, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to get the best possible people. I'm not going to be the captain. Yeah. And thank goodness I did. Because Larry Phelan brings a different kind of energy to Larry, to Alcar Dovan, than I would have, and I think that's a really positive thing.
In that episode of Star Trek Excelsior, Daniel LaForce Johnson played Jack Kelder, Alistair Stewart played Leo.
That's
Walt
it. We're done.
Keys is John Hastings.
And again,
Kennedy is Sora.
If you really want to do this, if anybody's really interested, listen to this credit read, and then go to a more recent credit read, and you'll hear a difference in microphones. And I hope nobody is out there who is so hard up for entertainment that they will do that.
I've done that, but it's my show. I have to.
Yeah.
This also means it's the last time we use the Klein Project Star Trek Generations track, which I can no longer find anywhere on Earth. I'm just lucky to have it in my music library, but I love this piece, and it's a really good pairing with the actual Generations theme song because it is the same song, just done on an electric guitar.
Be sure to tune in for the Excelsior's next adventure.
I think I missed this coming March 2000 guitar track at the end more than I missed the actual theme song we were using at the beginning. And then the so long and thanks for all the fish at the end, which my daughter says is boring and I should stop using it.
This has been an Excelsior production.
I don't know what her problem is.
Well, and the nice thing is that if you haven't had enough of epidemics yet, the next episode introduces an epidemic. That's
yeah, we got to get that going before you know this whole thing is over. I don't think it's going to be over all that soon, unfortunately.
No, yeah, unfortunately. So, yeah. That is just interesting how the subject comes up, and that is one of the crises that acting Captain Dovan has to deal with is this incredibly deadly plague that comes from nowhere.
Yep. And right now, I'm listening with my daughter to No One Gets Out Alive. And that's another one with a plague that just suddenly breaks out. And she, you know, the first time she listened to this 6 months ago had a very different context for what rapid spread of a disease looked like than she does now. But she does like spooky things, so she's so far going fine with it.
Yep. Yeah, that's the one that's got the Parisi squares in it.
That is the one with the Parisi squares in it. And she asked me the rules of Parisi squares in the car yesterday while we were listening to it. And I said, no one knows.
Yeah. I do. I invented them.
Yes. Gary made up a bunch of stuff for this. I love the air horn at the end of that sequence. That's great. Yeah.
It's
sort of like
this basketball and hockey and highlight.
Cross? Highlight. Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah. And Fizbin.
Because what the trick was...
Ion mallets.
Yeah, they're using these mallets. But I was trying to figure out how the mallets are supposed to be used. Well, it turns out the puck is a smart puck. It flies. It never hits the ground. It stays in the air. So they're using the mallets to move it around. Then I thought, okay, we've got hockey with the sidewalls on it.
Like that.
You know, if we got the hockey with the sidewalls, then it's going to be hitting the sidewalls once in a while. That's that thump you hear every once in a while right in your front of your face.
Yep. I figured that out.
Okay.
It's a very vivid scene.
But then the trick is, okay, you could cheat. You know, somebody is trying to block the shot. You could bounce it off the wall into the goal. Well, that's not the way it works. It's a smart puck. You can't do an indirect shot into the goal. You have to do a direct shot.
Wow.
Which makes it much different.
That I did not get.
You can pass it around. All you can bounce it off the wall, but you have to hit it directly into the goal.
Okay. There you go, everyone. Okay. Parisi squares from Gary Cobham, who has created the only known scene of Parisi squares in Star Trek canon or non-canon, as far as I know. So
I've never heard anything.
You should accept it. No, I've never seen anything, and even the new shows seem to be staying away from it. So it's all yours.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us tonight, Gary. It's been a pleasure. And
both times. I'm going to delete this file right now, so we have to do it a third time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, at that time, maybe we'll get it right. So
maybe we could do some other episode sometime. Move along in the season.
Well, we might.
Groundhog Day. Put your little hand in mine.
It certainly might happen. Gary, you're going to be welcome anytime. I certainly hope we do get a chance to do another episode. Who knows?
Yeah.
And James, thank you for being here. It's a lot of fun to do these, and not as much commentary maybe as maybe some people might expect on the episode itself, but what the heck? Hopefully,
we don't want to talk about it.
It wasn't like last time.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you can tell which ones we're proud of because we kind of quiet down, and the ones that we want to cover up, we just sort of talk over. So, but thank you both very much, and I hope that everyone enjoys it. And at some point, we will get back together, and James will do another episode at some point.
Yes, we will, and as soon as this is done and filed, I'm going to go and work on the final mixdown for Shakedown, which I actually need to... Mike, when are you free for credits in the next few days?
I am free. Send them to my email and we'll get them out to you.
Okay, I will write some credits up tonight and send them over because I want to get that episode finished. Thank you much. And thank you again.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.